So thank you all so much for coming here tonight. We're hoping that you're going to enjoy our discussion. So I'm going to get right into it and ask you guys, what do you think is the difference between graffiti art and street art? Is there a difference? Where do you think it comes from?
You want me to take that one?
Yeah.
Okay, so some people would say there is no difference. Like, it's like pop and coke and cola, mm-hmm. and it's all the same thing. Some people would say street art is more visual, if you would look at it in exact terms. And graffiti is more word-based. And then urban art is kind of the encompassing, overarching denominator. So that's kind of in the exact terms. But, you know, I would really say it's probably all the same thing.
So that was also my understanding. And I also believe that street art kind of evolved out of graffiti art. So if we're looking at, for example, Basquiat and Keith Haring in the 70s and 80s, who were doing street art, it kind of has evolved into a different language, if you will. Would you agree with that?
What's the question?
So the question is how... Looking at how it started with graffiti, sort of word-based art, which was more about a social, you know, commentary, if you will, and it has evolved into something that's more pictorial, that's more image-based, to the point where in New York, I think, at the moment, there's actually programs where they're encouraging artists to create street art to make sure that there's no graffiti being created. So I'm just sort of wondering what your thoughts are around that.
I mean, myself, I come from a graffiti background, and when I began as a 9-year-old kid in the mid 80s, I wasn't aware of the term street art,
right?
Even though there was Basquiat and Keith Haring, who obviously wasn't doing traditional graffiti,
but it's
not until the more recent years when I started hearing the term street art, even though graffiti art is very much street art because that's where it all began. So, but being an artist, labels are always difficult.
We like labels.
Yeah, which is all right. So, but as an artist, it's like myself. I will always feel as a graffiti writer at heart.
And how does one go in general, or maybe we can ask you this question, how does one go from creating art on walls to selling art in galleries?
I wish I had a simple answer, but I can only speak for myself. It's been a gradual thing from, you know, starting doing graffiti when I was 9 years old. And basically all I've been doing is painting, and one thing leading to another. It's less than 10 years ago that I started doing studio work. And that was a major step, because studio work is traditionally shown in exhibition spaces, galleries.
So, Maus, do you think that street art has attained a position in a contemporary art market?
Yeah, absolutely. So the more kind of, I call it the street artists that start on the street, or the artists that start on the street. People like Kohl's, Basquiat, Haring. And then, of course, you've got the kind of the younger street artists, or the artists that have still not come to fruition. But does it consist of a group of artists that's come to the gallery world, that's come to secondary market? Absolutely. Bonhams has done sales of urban art.
Yeah, in London.
Years ago, since 2008, which is quite a long time. And I've been very successful in doing so. And there's artists that come in and out of that market. So it's very vibrant. It's evolved. It's interesting to see as well, like, a lot of these artists going so mainstream and moving into evening sales and making, you know, world records like Kohl's did in Hong Kong, $14 million is incredible to see. But it's also because it's very accessible to people, I think. It's like the imagery is, you can see the music, you can see it on skateboards, you can see it on the branding that a lot of the artists actually use when they work with certain companies. So it's much more widespread, I think, which plays to this kind of excitement. So yes, absolutely. But it's definitely a genre. We're planning a sale in August 1st till the 9th. And what's also interesting is we're moving them more online, in particular to go to a global audience. So we're seeing, unlike other art categories, that street art is actually very international and picked up by the whole world, whereas other categories can be very niche and very specific. So it's super exciting.
So it's not geographically bound in any way, even though you've got like your well-known Banksy, UK artist, what's his name, Black Lorette, Paris-based artist. So it's still, so it, is there an international collector base for all of that?
It's also amazing what Instagram and social media really does to this. So people ask me a lot, like, How do I know when a street artist comes to market? And people can sign up for a gallery mailing list, which may be a traditional way, but more importantly, a lot of people are following a lot of the artists on social media. And the social media drives this internationality, I would say, of the art. And in particular, street art is doing actually much better almost in that sense, and probably be more brought to the forefront as a result of this innovation of the social media and the imagery that's coming forward through that.
And does it work for you as well? You're active on Instagram, for example. Like, do you sell art through your Instagram account, or how does it work for you?
Well, Instagram for me is mainly a platform to showcase my work.
Okay.
I don't sell work through Instagram. Platform to show my work, also to show a little bit behind the work.
Right.
Which I think is, nice and important. And today, you, if you're not on Instagram, you
don't exist.
Yeah, which is why it's super nice to be here and see. I've seen a lot of, people in real life who, usually I just see them on Instagram. So that's super important.
But as a street artist, do you feel that you're part of the contemporary art world, or do you feel like you're part of the street art world? Like, what is the interaction between the two, from your perspective?
I have a very non-traditional background when it comes to everything. I've never really felt, even though I started doing graffiti at such a young age, but I never felt like really comfortable. I have one foot in street art, one in contemporary, but I have like one foot in both. I try not to think too much about labels once again. I do my thing, and then, what it's considered, and that's up to other people to.
Right, I understand. But yeah. In a way, you're following the same trajectory as any artist who, is represented by galleries, who's doing commissions, who is doing, really exciting corporate collaborations. So in a way, I guess labeling you as a contemporary artist wouldn't be entirely wrong.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you think, I remember when I lived in Shoreditch, like a long time ago, there were Banksys all over the place. And it's so fun to see that these are now being sold at auction for such large amounts. That's just the business person in me talking. I mean, it's really interesting. So what do you think makes a good street artist? Like, is it about authenticity? Is it about form? Like, do the same criteria apply that we see in a contemporary art market? I'm asking both of you.
I tend to, speak from a more graffiti point of view, and that's an interesting question, because one of the original ideas behind graffiti is not to follow any rules. That's the whole idea of doing, work on the streets. The street belongs to everybody. So I don't think nowadays there's so many rules how things can be done or can't be done. And I think authenticity.
Yeah.
As long as it's honest, that's all that matters.
Do you agree with that viewpoint?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the good news is there's a lot of bodies and people that are checking if it's authentic. Sadly, in this market, there are a lot of fakes and there are a lot of forgeries. So I would always be buyer aware. Be careful what you buy. Buy from a reputable gallery, from a good auction house. Do your research. Do your homework. Don't get spooked. But also, perhaps, you know, be very careful if you buy anything online or through eBay. If it's too good to be true, probably it is too good to be true. But it comes for any collecting category, I would say. Like, you see fakes and forgeries, and you notice as much as I do in any category. But, you know, I think this is such great notoriety, and so much focus has recently been on street art. So it's pretty new, and it's, you know, people are just excited about it, but there's all of a sudden not just the street value, but there's the monetary value. And that creates a whole different market movement of, sadly, not always the nicest behavior.
No, I understand. And so where would you buy, if there was a young collector, where would you advise them to go to look at art or to buy street art? What would you recommend?
I invite younger collectors who are serious to visit my studio. I think it's a nice gesture, and, you know, they can always go to a gallery show, fair like this, but I'm trying to think the way, what I would like to do, like get to see the process behind, the person behind.
Right.
For me, the person behind is, in many cases, more important than the actual work. And that's something I feel is not always discussed enough.
In the galleries, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. The person behind.
And do you feel that the market is competitive? Do you think the street art is competitive for artists? Are there a lot of artists around?
Yeah, there's an incredible amount of amazing talent, and of course the competition is tough.
So how do you deal with that? Because you're clearly doing a really great job of, you know, you've got a great website, you've got a huge number of exhibitions. How do you manage that? Like, what advice would you give to someone who was just starting out and who was trying to grow their studio without giving away all your secrets?
It feels weird to be here because normally I would be in my studio or working on commissions. So the answer is, there's no shortcuts, hard work. I basically work 7 days a week. And so at the end of the day, you know, once again, people tend to see, you know, the end result, but the work behind is...
the process, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard work for everybody.
Right, for any artist, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And so where is... We talked about it briefly before we came on. What is the... what is the reason that many artists work under an acronym, or they hide their face, or they hide their name? What's the reason for that?
I used to do it too. And the reason I used to hide my face and identity was because graffiti in its original nature is an illegal act. So it's, you can't go around and write your real name because, you know, you will end up in jail.
That's not good. So basically, it's not just something that people who may not know that's the reason may think it's odd that someone, you know, one of today's street arts walks around and covers their face. So it's good to know that's where that's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty logic.
Yeah, if you think about it.
So, and that's, you know, important part of the graffiti culture, you know, adrenaline. Also, I think graffiti in its original form is by kids, for kids. It's something that the kids could do without having their parents know too much about it or tell them what to do. And even though I will always feel as a graffiti writer, it doesn't mean that I have to go out and do it. I believe everything has its time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so do you think it's ethical if you paint something on a wall, you create something, do you think it's ethical if that artwork's being removed or is being sold? Should we take into account the artist's wishes when it's being, illegal or not, when it's being put on the wall?
No, of course not, but it's not a simple question because if you do something on the street without permission, I don't think you can come afterwards and claim it. So, I mean, it's part of the game if you do it on the street. You know, you might get caught by the police. If you make a great career, you know, at the later point, people might, as in Banksy's case, but there's also ethics side of things. Of course, it's not correct, but I mean, we live in a weird world, and you know, there's money to be made. So, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I was about to say, where does the market going, Mavs?
Well, so my opinion is to not, you know, remove things when really it's not supposed to be removed. And there are certain artists that would actually not give you the certificate of authenticity if the piece has been removed illegally or without their permission. So be aware when you buy something like that and always ask for those piece of information. But, you know, I agree, like, if it was put on the street, sometimes it's the government that destroys it. So where do you draw the line? And sometimes it's commissioned. So, you know, but then people might want to move it. People are selling the building, and the person that gets the new building doesn't want to have this piece in their building. And I'm actually dealing with a current situation of that kind. And what do you do? Like, you don't want that work of art to get lost or to go missing, and the building might get destroyed. So is it building including all the artwork to be destroyed? And this is in the case of a Keith Haring. Or do we take out the artwork and find a new home for it?
And so where do you see, I mean, can you give us any indication of where you think street art's going? Do you think it's going to continue to grow as an area within the contemporary market? Or what do you think?
I definitely think it will grow. There is more and more attention to street art and street artists. And particularly, there's a lot of really younger collectors. It really speaks to younger generation, which is very, it's very nice. Because, you know, I'm used to a certain client base, but to actually see a lot of young people moving, interacting with the art, it's much more accessible. It's much more fun in many ways, too. It's things that they can identify with. It's things that they understand or, you know, they it's part of what they do. It's part of what they hear in terms of music. They see the same artist on the cover of those types of music that they affiliate with. So skateboards, a lot of artists come from skateboard culture as well. So it's kind of more popular culture. But from an auction house point of view, you know, we always look where the market is going. And look, if there's a market, if there are two bidders, if people are interested in it, you know, the sky's the limit, really. I don't even know where it's going. It's moving, and it's moving fast. So
that's really exciting. And I also think it's exciting that it's attracting younger collectors because, you know, as we all know, younger collectors can have a real difficult time getting into the market because some artwork is just really, really expensive. So I think that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and the thing with street art, it's also multifaceted. So whereas other contemporary art genres is very much a single way or two ways of selling, street art, it's the artist selling things themselves. There's often a lot of edition work. There's prints. There is things being produced on other materials. There, you know, they sell. They have their own selling platforms, which is again very exciting. That artists are actually taking matters in their own hands, and they're not relying on an agent to be in between. They communicate directly to their audience through social media. There's a very different way of interacting, and it's changing the art world, I would say.
So change for the better. So do you have any final comments before we ask the public if they have any questions?
No, I mean, thanks for having me. And Yeah, it's super nice. It's my first time at Moniker, and nice to be on the viewer side of things too. So
where's your artwork so that we can point everybody to go and see it? Where's it located? Julia mentioned it already, right? Where's it located again? Oh, near the entrance? Okay, so go and see his work near the entrance. What's that? Oh, where else in the city?
Oh, I think the nearest one is by Houston and Forsyth, Hotel Gatsby. It's a 4 or 5 story mural.
And when is your Amex card coming out?
June.
Can we like get one?
I think they closed the application.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a very cool project. So that's another thing that I really like about what you just mentioned, the collaboration with corporate initiatives, because I think it's a really fun thing to do, to bring art into a corporate setting.
What's that?
I said, I was sort of pontificating away. I said, I think it's really nice that artists, you know, that artists are collaborating with companies like Amex, because it really brings art into, you know, in another way, makes it more accessible to people to enjoy it. You know, people can buy it, but they can also see it in these collaborations.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, I will have my art in hundreds of thousands of people's back pockets. But also, there's two sides of everything. Working with really big companies, it's not always to, you know, maintain your artistic integrity. And in the case of Amex, that's what I told myself. If I'm going to do it, let's see how it goes. I'm going to treat it like any other commission and not compromise with the vision I have. And sometimes, you know, there can be, they try and point you in a direction. There's a lot of people who have opinions, but it's interesting. The end result of my Amex design is pretty much 100% the original vision I had in my head. I made about maybe 20 different designs, and they went with my own personal favorite. And that's a nice example that you can do big corporate commissions while maintaining your...
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because that's important that you're able to do that within the company.
Because it's easy to start thinking if such a big company approaches you, like, what do they expect from you?
Right.
I really tried hard not to do that, even though, of course, you're nervous.
Well, I think it's a really big deal. I mean, I think it's something to be really proud of.
Yeah, you're right.
So, do you have any tips for someone who, you know, I get asked a lot of questions from artists who want to promote their work, contemporary artists, not necessarily in your area. Like, is there anything that you can say to a street artist in particular who wants to make it in that area? I mean, obviously, I'm not suggesting that you go and, like, spray graffiti on, you know, I don't know, a really important landmark building in New York. But what would you suggest there? How does a street artist get their art seen other than putting it on buildings? Like the Bushwick Collective, you know, they're huge.
Sure.
So should they join a collective? What should they do?
I think it's important to do things in the right order. I mean, first and foremost, it's about the work. And good work will always speak for itself. I mean, you can build a career to a certain point through, you know, promoting yourself, having money, but only to a certain point. At the end of the day, it's about the work. Timing is one important aspect, but, you know, always do your best. Whether it's a small thing or a big thing, you never know who you're going to run into, who you're going to meet. So I try and, each work I do, I always try and I'm always chasing my best piece. And the day I'm not feeling that, then it's time to do something different. As long as you do your best, one thing will hopefully lead to another. So
that's a good piece of advice. I agree with that.
Yeah.
And Mouse, when is your Keith Haring coming on the block again?
Yes, 15th of May. So we've got a fantastic Keith Haring tarp work. It's 10 feet. It's really, really big. And it's super exciting because what we didn't really discuss is the messaging in a lot of the graffiti work and the social historical aspects of it. And what was fascinating with Keith Haring, he had a lot of messages. He did a lot of murals. He did a lot of subway paintings, as we all know. But then ultimately he moves on to a medium called tarpaulin. And one of the reasons is so that he could roll these tarps up and take them abroad to, you know, there was no Instagram. So, you know, take these messages elsewhere. And one of those is coming up for sale. It's a very fascinating piece. It all has to do with the HIV crisis, produced in 1983. It's very sexual. It's very explicit. A lot of people are like, "Whoa, what is this?" But the messaging in it is like, be very careful here because HIV is a real thing. It can do a lot of damage. There's a little death mask with two crosses, which calls use later on. So you can also see the kind of birth of Basquiat Haring in later graffiti artists and how they're all correlated. So a super exciting piece. It's coming up for sale 15th of May. Come and see it at Bonhams. We're opening our show on the 1st and 2nd of May. And love to welcome you there and talk more.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. Did you have any questions?
Thank you so much. Wonderful panel. I really appreciated that. Oh, closer. Thank you so much. Yeah, so how would you characterize the recognition of women and their contributions to street art? Do you feel like, because most of the street artists that we recognize are predominantly men, and especially the ones that we see at market are men, What should we do?
I think the whole question of women artists is a very good one, and thank you for raising them. I think what we're actively trying to do at Bonhams is to bring female artists to the forefront, and sometimes it's about the female artists speaking up themselves. I think what I do agree with Ruben is generally the work speaks for itself, so there is no reason why female artists shouldn't come more to the forefront. Having said that, though, there's so much catching up that we need to do within the art market and within the art world in general, from looking at the museums and the representation and the percentage of women artists in those museums, even though there are a ton of women on the boards, doesn't make any sense to me. It's a prolific topic. And so like on the personal level, I wouldn't discriminate between a female or a male artist, whichever the artist is and whatever notoriety they have, they will come onto the auction block. The question also is how many female, you know, artists, street artists, that is, are there out there? That's, you know, and I think the ratio there might be slightly skewed as well. Like, it's a, I don't know, that maybe you can speak to that. How many female artists, street artists, are out there at the moment?
More now than when I grew up. Yeah, once again, coming from a graffiti, traditional graffiti background, it's always been way too male-dominated. I remember being a kid, there was one girl who wrote graffiti, and that was like a thing, and there's a lot more now, but there should definitely be more room. I don't know how, because, yeah, I mean, it's about the work, but also the person behind. And I don't know, discussing it, thanks for, you know, asking the question. Very happy to hear it. Like, for me personally, it's like, I like collaborating as a creative challenge, and like just collaborating with artists who do totally different types of thing. And I wish I would have the opportunity to do more, you know, collaborations with female artists. So we'll see. Hopefully more in the future.
Across the art world, I think.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Yeah. I actually have two questions. The first question for Muiz. Because graffiti art is kind of socially and politically strong sometimes, and it can be a little crude as well, is it difficult for Bonhams to choose pieces to actually sell at auction because of the, for the subject matter? And how do you go about that selection process? And then I have another question, which I can mention after.
Yes. So the Keith Haring that we're going to sell on the 15th of May, we actually were presented with that question, because basically it's a figure of a Mickey Mouse representing innocence with an erect penis. And it's a figure of a figure that looks like a devil and has the devil kind of like trident with a little heart, also with an erect penis. And then Mickey is showing its bum, right? So I'm presented with that piece, and I already know that other auction houses have looked at this, and they've been like moving around this piece, yes, no, yes, no. Are we going to take this one in? Are we going to take another one in? What's the price? And, you know, even looking at some of my colleagues who are not in this type of contemporary art world, more traditional art categories, they kind of asked me that question, like, is this even sellable? And I'm like, of course it's sellable. This is socially, historically, probably one of the most important Keith Harings that's ever going to come to market. So should we be, i.e. an auction house, and censoring this kind of work just because there is not one, but there are two penises, and we're having a Disney character in here, which people might take offense to, because it's basically Mickey being kind of penetrated. So it's a challenge, right? So, but then on the other hand, the whole HIV/AIDS crisis is a huge challenge to, and particularly 1980s New York, nobody knew what this crisis was about. And everybody was mortified. There's a little mask in there that probably represents kind of death, or even people thought that they could contract HIV through just breathing or air. So to me, this is probably one of the most prolific, most historically important pieces that you could look at Keith Haring. Our competitors are showing very different pieces, very kind of like plain, probably equally exciting in many ways, but not as provocative. So my personal vision is, no, you do bring these things to market, and you do price them at their worth, and you know, you let the collectors decide and the museums and the institutions decide if you're right. But I don't think we should apply that kind of level of censorship. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. That's a perfect answer. Thanks. And my other question is for the artist on board. I personally have done a couple of murals myself, and I find it physically very demanding. What would you comment in regards to what sort of diet and exercise between murals and leading up to, you know, what sort of regimen do you have and would you advise?
Wow, nobody has asked me about that before. And I think very few people think about those things. The best way to describe is, and I'm speaking for myself again, you need to have almost a sportsman type of mentality. You have to practice in order to be physically able to do a 10-story mural. Diet plays a big... I have to think about it. I came to a point where I had to start low carb, a lot of quick energy, less sugar, because if you're gonna paint 10 to 12 hours, 3 months straight. I just finished a mural, took me 3 months over the winter. And in between, I run because I have to. Sometimes you use scaffolding, 10 stories, up and down,
from 8 to 5, and you know, it's not about trying to be cool doing street art. It's no joke. So personally, I run and I pay attention to what I eat and drink more than I used to. It has to do with age too. So it's basically doing whatever it takes. And I go to massage, chiropractor, you know, your knees. It's hard physical labor, so take those things seriously. It's about priorities. I often tell people, you know, yes, I can't be out partying all night. It's very simple. If I go out and party, I'm not going to be up there 10 hours. So thanks for asking me. First time.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to know from an urban artist, street artist, what do you think is the future of the street art? I mean, I come from the contemporary field, and I see differences between artists, street artists, and contemporary artists. I think you have, like, the cities, your canvas, so you can work, like, you know, spread your word more differently than fine artists or contemporary artists. For you, what's the next challenge, or what's going to be the future of the street art? Where it goes? Have you put your mind on, you know, the future of that?
I mean, I started painting on the street at such young age of 9. When you're that young, you don't think why you do things. You do things you think are fun. It wasn't until later that you started questioning things. And trends come and go. I've seen graffiti being popular in the 80s, 90s. But I think people will always have a desire to express themselves on the streets. So there's going to be high and lows, but it's not going anywhere. I mean, how's that possible? How would people suddenly stop feeling going out and, you know, telling them what they think through?
I mean, I think there is a future, a huge future. But I mean, where it's going to, what's going to change? Because something is, I mean, expression in the streets, it's so cool. It's so, you know, avant-garde. I mean, I think contemporary art is what you are doing, guys, street artists. So, I mean, have you put your mind there? I mean, like, I want to know, you are the visualist, and you are the people who are visualizing, how do you say? You know, you are very avant-garde, so I mean.
It has gone commercial. That's the biggest difference. And, I mean, why not? Complaining is easy. Why not, you know, being commercial doesn't necessarily have to be negative. It has given me a lot of opportunities, and it can be challenging in great ways. How wonderful is it that we have, you know, a lot of these public works done with permission? So, yeah, it's going to keep going commercial. There's so many unexplored territories left. Like now I did the, you know, credit card. I mean, if somebody would have told me as a 10-year-old kid. So, yeah, we could talk about that for...
Anybody else? So, talking about the future, one thing we've noticed in Toronto is a lot of buildings are bringing in digital media screens on the sides of their buildings. Have digital media as, you know, a big part of the buildings in the future of, you know, the transformations of the buildings. Are you seeing that in the graffiti scene as well, that people are leveraging these digital media screens for, you know, the future of Because it could yield to a lot of more opportunities as well.
Sure. I mean, being first and foremost a painter, it's a very old school media. And I'm very interested in new technology. And I was recently approached by virtual reality. There's a new program, which I think is very exciting, virtual reality thing where you can actually paint inside this virtual reality. It's difficult to explain, and I'm not a virtual reality expert, but that's a nice example of going digital. I'm hoping it will happen. I'm invited to basically paint inside this virtual reality worlds with those virtual reality brushes, and I try and be very open-minded. Yeah, there's video mapping, definitely augmented reality, like taking the murals to next level. There's definitely gonna, that's the future, even though I will always be a traditional painter, but we live in exciting times when it comes to that, for sure.
Well, thanks so much, everybody, and thanks to our amazing panelists for all sharing your expertise and your advice and your experiences with us here today, and thank you all as well. If you missed any of it, the recording will be available on oneartnation.com, so please check it out. But thank you for being here, and thank you as well. I hope you got something great out of it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.